So here's a translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki. Jai. Having seen all these incidents in Brihadvan, Nanda Maharaj became more and more astonished, and he remembered the words spoken to him by Vasudev in Mathura. So we'll read text number 34. One day Mother Yashoda, having taken Krishna up and placed him on her lap, was feeding him milk from her breast with maternal affection. The milk was flowing from her breast and the child was drinking it. And then this text number 36. O King Parikshit, when the child Krishna was almost finished drinking his mother's milk and Mother Yashoda was touching him and looking at his beautiful, brilliantly smiling face, the baby yawned and Mother Yashoda saw in his mouth the whole sky, the higher planetary system and the earth, the luminaries in all directions, the sun, the moon, fire, air, the seas, islands, mountains, rivers, forests, and all kinds of living entities, moving and non-moving. And here's a purport, Mashallah Prabhupada. By the arrangement of Yogamaya, Krishna's pastimes with Mother Yashoda were all regarded as ordinary. So here was an opportunity for Krishna to show his mother that the whole universe is situated within him. In his small form, Krishna was kind enough to show his mother the Virat Rupa, the universal form, so that she could enjoy seeing what kind of child she had on her lap. The rivers have been mentioned here as daughters of the mountains. Nagamstad Duhitra. It is the flowing of the rivers that makes big forests possible. There are living entities everywhere, some of them moving and some of them not moving. No place is vacant. This is a special feature of God's creation. Om Ajnana Tirmandascha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pasatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Just to repeat the translation from today's verse. Having seen all the incidents in Brihadvan, Nanda Maharaj became more and more astonished and he remembered the words spoken to him by Vasudev in Mathura. Okay, Hare Krishna, everyone. So I'd like to seek the blessings of the devotees. It's quite nerve-wracking sitting on the Vyasasan, speaking on Bhagavatam, and especially the 10th canto. So really, the blessings of devotees would be quite useful here. So something nice and profound can come. So it's mentioned that I have confidence something, you know, productive will come from my mouth because it's mentioned that when the hearers are very eager to hear, then Krishna sees that and he'll empower the speaker to say something for the benefit of the audience. So that's my saving grace, your eagerness. So today we have an interesting, it's a very interesting topic, and I'm quite grateful to Nandan Prabhu. I got my dates mixed up. I thought I was giving class next Monday, so I just found out yesterday I was supposed to give. So last minute I came up with something with the support of Sutupa Prabhu, of course. Thank you. So today I came up with, really, it was really nice. Last 20 hours, I'd say my consciousness was very Krishna conscious because of the pressure of giving the class and then just being absorbed in this Krishna pastime. and he gave me an opportunity to look at different references for today's class. And the first thing I actually learned from this was we call 10th canto is called what? What is 10th canto called? What was that, bro? Ashraya. Or in Sanskrit? Or in English? Shelter. Oh, samambonan. I always wondered, what on earth does that word actually mean? I've never come across it in my life. And I thought maybe it's a Sanskrit terminology. So just this morning it struck to me that, let me find out what it actually means. So I had to do the Wikipedia search. So does anyone know what samambonam actually mean? Complete total. Yeah, according to Wikipedia, it's kind of okay. Actual definition, it's actually Latin terminology, which means the highest good. That's what the terminology comes up with, the highest good. So basically, it's basically the highest good, which is life, righteous life, which is lived in communion with God and living according to God's principle. That's what samambonam actually means. And so it's mentioned that, you know, that out of all the scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence. And the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, is like the cream of the cream. And therefore, the 10th canto is the essence where one's spontaneous love can be developed for Krishna. So today we're reading 7th chapter. So just to like kind of summarize what's been happening so far. From first five chapters, we hear the prayers of the demigods, because we hear that Mother Bhumi, she goes to the demigods saying that she's overburdened by the demoniac personalities on the earth. And then she seeks for their help. They go to Vishnu, and then Vishnu says, I will come very soon. Krishna advents, then there is a description of the birth of Krishna, and then we hear the killing of the child of Devaki by Kamsa. And then Krishna still survives, and Kamsa is very fearful, and Kamsa now is in anxiety to kill this eighth child of Vasudeva and Devaki. And then sixth chapter we hear Krishna kills Putana, and now we're hearing seventh chapter, which is Trinavat pastime, killing a Trinavat pastime. So as I said, 10th canto is like the essence, is the sweet pastimes, is Krishna's confidential pastimes, and it's kind of very relishable. But when someone is new in spiritual life, in Krishna consciousness, and they try to, they straight away first read the 10th canto, it's very difficult for them to relish and appreciate 10th canto, isn't it? You know, why do you think that it's difficult to relish the 10th canto for someone who's brand new? Like, I'll give you an example. I've got a confession to make. When I first came to Krishna consciousness at university, I heard that, oh, 10th canto is the essence. And I was thinking, okay, so 10th canto is the essence, so why should I read the first 9 canto? So I didn't know this, but then in the Krishna book, I just thought, let me just read the 10th canto first, specifically the Rasa Leela pastime. I didn't know, okay, so I'm just being honest here. And I read it, and just it made no sense to me. You know, I just thought, okay, that's nice, but I'm not getting any goosebumps or ecstatic love of Godhead, you know? So it's interesting, like, why is it difficult for someone who's new in Krishna consciousness to relish the 10th canto, the Krishna's sweet pastimes? Sorry? We still have material desires. Okay, that's one thing. Matthias Guru? Yeah, lack of faith, his pastimes are ordinary. Enviousness. So actually, it's mentioned that before we can appreciate Krishna's sweet pastime, which is known as rasa, it's very important to establish something called the tattva. Tattva means the philosophical establishment of who Krishna actually is. Without establishing the tattva, it's very difficult to appreciate rasa. It's very difficult to appreciate Krishna's position. And like Matthias Prabhu says, that we won't have faith and we'll just think that Krishna's pastime is just normal, it's ordinary. And when you read it, it seems quite ordinary. When you see the exchanges of Krishna, Mother Yashoda, it's just like a normal dealing between a mother and a child. And that's why it's very amazing that how Prabhupada has given us this philosophy in a very systematic way, and he's presented Christian consciousness in a very logical and systematic way. Because what he does is, first, he tells you the first book we need to read is the Bhagavad Gita. And it's mentioned the Bhagavad Gita, it establishes a philosophical understanding of who God is. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's mentioned it's like it's a bachelor's degree. And then once you've understand the bachelor's degree, you move on to the master's degree, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then after Bhagavatam, you can actually move on and actually study the PhD level of devotional service, which is the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And this is why it's very systematic. When we go through systematic, then we can actually appreciate Krishna's intimate pastimes. And therefore, Bhagavad Gita is known as the words of Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is the pastimes and activities of Krishna. And Chaitanya Charitamrita is where you can actually get into the mind of Krishna. So that's even more deeper and intimate. And so the question arises is, what is Krishna's position? And this is very important to kind of realize what Krishna's position is. Because once, if we don't establish what Krishna's position is, we won't be able to appreciate him in the right way. And therefore it's mentioned, this is a nice analogy I heard from Sutta Prabhu, and I find it very easy, and it's kind of comprehensible that you can actually appreciate Krishna's position. So it's mentioned that we are here and Krishna is here. Okay? And there is a distinction between us. We're individual, Krishna's an individual, and that's separate. And what happens is what the Mayavads do is they try to bring us, the living entities, on the platform of God. So then they say we're all God. And what the atheists do is they try to bring God down to our level because they don't believe in God. So hence, there is no concept of God. So that's the point for the atheists. The Mayavads, they try to bring us on the platform of God, and the atheists bring God back to the platform of the living entity. There is no God. And therefore, the first thing that establishes that there is a distinction between the two entities, God and the living entity. And the living entity is the part and parcel of Krishna, same in quality but different in quantity, and that's the difference, that it has to be established that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and we're just part and parcel servant of Krishna. And that's why when we read Bhagavatam, the first three verses actually establish this. It establishes the philosophical truth. And it's quite deep. Like when you read the first three verse of the first canto, it's very deep, so philosophical. It's like, oh, I thought I was going to read Krishna pastime, but that's not what happens. Like Vyasadeva presents the philosophical aspect first, and he establishes it. And that's what the first verse, like the translation itself, like it explains the position of Krishna very clearly. So everyone from the beginning know exactly what Krishna's position is. And so it's mentioned, the first of all, Vyasadeva actually establishes that Krishna, Vasudev Krishna, is actually the absolute truth. And what does absolute truth mean? In the purport, Prabhupada writes, absolute truth is actually personality of Godhead, who is primeval cause of all causes. He is the creator, the sustainer, and the destroyer of the manifestation of the universe. He is also independent because there is no other cause beyond him. Many times we get this question like, okay, if God created everything, then who created God? That question itself is kind of redundant because the whole point of God is that there is no cause of God. Krishna also is mentioned is that because of Krishna, material world is a temporary manifestation of the reaction between the modes of material nature. It's establishing. So in the first verse, it's establishing that there is God. God lives in the spiritual world. Living entities living in the material world because of their desire to enjoy separate from Krishna. And that's the reason why we're here. And in this material world, the living entities are struggling very hard to find happiness. But unfortunately, they cannot because of the modes and the control by the modes. And last but not least, in this first verse, I was just running through some points that Krishna, however, exists eternally in the transcendental abode in Goloka Vrindavan, and his abode is free from this illusory representation of the modes. like that. So these are the philosophical truth that gets established in the first verse, so the first canto. Then, and so Bhagavatam is very nice because it's mentioned one of the features of Bhagavatam is that it establishes people's dormant Krishna consciousness. It establishes the purpose of life, why we're here, what is our purpose, what is a connection with Krishna. And Bhagavatam is actually the saving grace for the conditioned souls. And therefore, in the second verse, it's quite interesting also, it's mentioned that what is the real welfare activity for an individual soul, for the living entity in the world? What do you think the real welfare work is? Nowadays, a lot of people are into philanthropy work, charity work, but what is the actual real welfare for the living entity? Go on, Prue. Study Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of times, like yesterday, we started an explore course and we got into a discussion about what is really a real happiness. So a lot of times people say happiness is when I see other people happy, when I see my friends and families happy. But then again, I tried to break it down, but what is real happiness? And people couldn't kind of find the answer. They say, oh, whatever they do, if they're happy, I'm happy. And then I pose the question to them that, okay, so say if a parent sees their kid happy, then according to your theory, you should be happy. But what about if the kid, it gets involved in drugs, alcohol, wasting his time and talent, and he's happy with that? Would the parent be happy with that? Obviously not. So the point is that you have to establish what is real happiness. And my presentation of happiness when I speak to new people is very simple. Jai Shri Radha Gokul Nanda ki, Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Gaurinitya ki, Jai. So when I present the concept of happiness to any new people, at university students, I keep it very simple and I say happiness is actually a state of consciousness. Happiness is actually a state of consciousness, and to the depending on what level of consciousness you're at, you will experience certain type of happiness. And basically I established the Pancha Kosha, which we read about in Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter. Everyone's familiar with the Pancha Kosha? You know, there's five levels of happiness that Krishna explains in the Gita. And it's explained that depending on which level you're at, you will experience certain type of happiness. And the first level of consciousness that explains that we experience happiness is called Anamaya. Anamaya is a platform where a living entity derives happiness from simple things like food and sleep. So generally they say babies are on platform of Anamaya. You give them food, you give them sleep, and they're satisfied. The second level of happiness above Anamaya is something called Pranamaya. Pranamaya means now the living entity acknowledges that he's a living personality, he has his needs, there are other people, and there is a relationship and connection with the other living entity. So then, anyone who derives happiness from family, friends, protection, preservation, defending, that comes under the platform of Pranamaya. That's just second level of consciousness. And happiness here is a little higher than Anamaya. Above this is something called Manamaya. Manamaya is a level where one derives happiness on a mental platform. So generally things like, you know, when we achieve something in life, we have certain goals in life, we achieve it, we get good qualification at universities, at jobs, or even just finding solutions to world problems is called happiness on a mental platform, Manamaya. And then therefore you get happiness from this platform also. Higher than that is something called Vijnanamaya. This is where spiritual knowledge kicks in, and this is where one gets an understanding of their individuality, how they're separate from matter, and their spirit soul. And then higher than that is something called Anandamaya. This is the goal of everyone. This is what everyone's trying to find. Everyone is looking for happiness. In the first canto, in the 10th verse, first chapter, it's mentioned that every living entity from Brahma to a tiny living entity like ants, they desire to relish some sort of taste that's derived from sense perception. And it's mentioned the sensual pleasures are technically called rasas. So everyone in this world is looking for rasas. But the problem is that the rasa that they're looking for, it often gets frustrated because the rasa is on a material platform. And whenever I've, last two weeks, I've been giving different talks at different places, and one thing I find is that in my talks, I find at the end of the talk, few people always start crying. And it's quite disturbing, and I'm thinking, is there something I said is wrong, or whatever. Like last week, on Saturday, we had a yoga retreat. And in the yoga retreat, I was talking about the point that if you don't have purpose in life, what happens is one of the problems when we don't have purpose or goal is that we will procrastinate. So I was just talking about the whole science of how procrastination works and different types of procrastination. And then at break time, I see this one lady, she just starts crying. And I'm like, oh no, what did I say now, you know? And then she said, you know what, what you said is all true. My whole life I've been procrastinating. All I've been doing is pouring coffee at people. I think she's a waitress. And this is all I've been doing 9 to 5 and my life is all useless. And I told her, listen, I don't want to mention a name, but I said, listen, look, I just told you the problem in the first part of this yoga retreat, you know, and don't cry because I haven't given you the solution yet. So come back and we'll tell you the solution. We'll talk about it, you know. Then last Friday, me and Shesha Prabhu, we started Gita Life in Cambridge. And so, you know, we're just doing our presentation. And I'm just talking about first chapter of the Gita. And that's not so esoteric. It's not so heavy. And next thing I know, there's one lady. She's got tears in her eyes, you know. And then I was thinking, oh, no, what did I say? And I asked Shesha, did I say anything wrong? And Shesha was questioning. I'm not sure, Prabhu, but maybe you did. By the end, I found out from the host that actually that devotee, she was going through a lot of troubles in her life. And then on Saturday, we had a university retreat. And just literally everything just happened back to back. And Saturday, we had a uni retreat. It was nice. 150 students came. And so the devotees had question-answer session. They broke the 150 students into smaller groups. And we did Q&A, so Sutapa, Nandan, myself. So I had a group upstairs in Prabhupada's room. And then I was talking, and it was a question-answer session. They were asking simple question, and I answered it. I think I answered it. And then one girl, she's a Chinese girl, and she comes up to me, and she's bawling her eyes out. And I'm like, oh no, what did I say now, you know? And I was thinking, this is a repeating pattern. And then she started telling me that first question she started telling me is like, why do bad things happen to good people? So it seemed like she was going through a lot of struggles and miseries in her life. And this is quite interesting because every single person that I see that everyone's looking for rasa, happiness. But it's mentioned that their rasa, their happiness is frustrated. And it's interesting. In Bhagavatam it says, how can a living entity actually be happy? And the solution is very simple. Prabhupada writes in the purport that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described as fountainhead of all rasas. When one associates with the Supreme Person of Godhead and exchanges one's constitutional rasa with the Lord, then the living entity actually is happy. So whatever everyone's looking for, only Krishna can provide that. And until they don't connect with Krishna, all the endeavor will be useless and it will end up in frustration. And that's why, right from the beginning, Srimad Bhagavatam says that, in the second verse, that Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest truth because it is actually distinguishing reality from illusion and is helping people understand what reality is and what illusion is. And most importantly, Srimad Bhagavatam helps uproot people from the three miseries of life. Adibhautik, Adiatmik, and Adidevik. So three miseries. When people read Bhagavatam, they will understand and know how to get rid of all their miseries. You know, so that's why once we understand the tattva, and this Chinese girl, I was talking to her, and I was trying to explain to her that, yeah, Krishna's there, and I was trying to give her some verses from the Gita, how Krishna says that when one who takes shelter of Krishna, Krishna preserves what one has and carries what one lacks. And for her, it was difficult to comprehend this concept because she doesn't have the philosophical understanding of establishing Krishna's supremacy. You know, so it's very important to understand the philosophy and the tattva of Krishna before we can relish his rasa. Because the goal is the rasa. And then I remember once Sutta Prabhupada was saying in one of his classes that in Vrindavan, when you go to Vrindavan and you see the Brajvasis, they have spontaneous love for Krishna. So one could argue that do they have philosophical understanding of who Krishna is? They don't. So then how does that work? You know, I thought you meant to know the tattva before you can know the rasa. So it's mentioned that the Brajvasis have natural spontaneous love for Krishna. So they don't need that philosophical understanding. They can spontaneously approach Krishna because of that Raghunuga bhav. Whereas us, living entities, we don't have that spontaneous love. So therefore, the acharyas have given us the philosophy, and through the process of purification, we get purified, and then the spontaneous love gets established. And one of the ways spontaneous love gets established is by hearing Krishna's sweet pastimes. And that's why 10th canto is very relishable. So I know today class is going to be short because we have the monthly meeting. So I was wondering, I wanted to actually share some really wonderful, sweet pastimes of Krishna. And so recently I came across and I've been reading His Holiness Shivaram Maharaj's Navraja Mahima. You know, it's a beautiful book and the pastimes are amazing because the way Maharaj presents it is really fascinating. Because what he does is he gets the commentaries of all the different acharyas and he puts all the pastimes in one place. So, of course, he takes references from Srimad Bhagavatam. Then there is Vishnu Chakravartaku, Sarta Darshini, Gopala Champu, Parva Champu, Ananda Vrindavan Champu, Garga Samhita, Brahma Vivarta Purana, and Krishna Janma Kanda. So he takes all this information of these pastimes and he puts it all together, and it's really nice to hear about it. So I was thinking it'd be nice to share certain stories and certain pastimes that's actually established and actually presented in this book. And we'll keep it to today's story and incidents related to this canto, this chapter. So the first story I'd like to mention and speak about is, it's a festival that in the Vedic times they celebrate. It's called Uthana. Is that right? Uthana? Anyways, you get the gist. What do you think that festival is all about? Heights? Kites? No, not quite. Uthana? Uthana? All right, let me just tell you what it means. Basically, this is a festival that they celebrate when a child actually starts kind of crawling or he turns over. So the child's first attempt to rise is called Uta. And so then there's a special festival called Uthana where they celebrate the child. This is the first time when the child gets an opportunity to go out. So Krishna, actually, after 3 months, Krishna turned over his crib. And as soon as the nurses noticed this, she told Mother Yashoda, who was overjoyed, and they immediately arranged for this wonderful festival. So this festival actually took place in the courtyard of Mother Maharaj Nanda's palace. And everyone was invited, the brahmanas, the local Brajvasis, and it was a very festive mood. And then there was a cart. It stood in the courtyard, and in this cart, it had is mentioned that there was all these valuable pots, pans, vessels used for special occasions like this. And the cart and its content represented, it's mentioned, Nanda Maharaj's resources, and were seen by the people as a clear symbol of goddess of fortune's grace upon the king, basically. So anyways, a festival is happening. This festival took about 4.5 hours, and it's mentioned that in this process, Krishna fell asleep. So what does Mother Yashoda do? Mother Yashoda places Krishna in the shade near the cart, and Krishna fell asleep. And then, of course, we hear that this is where a demon called Utkacha. Does anyone know who Utkacha is? Utkacha? It is, yeah, basically. That's another name for him. And it's interesting, his story, that he was actually, previously he was, believe it or not, Satakasura, he was actually the son of Hiranyakashipu. And once he caused disturbances in the ashram of Lomasa Muni, and the Muni actually cursed him actually to become a ghost. So because he was now in a subtle body, he entered the cart, and therefore with the idea of killing Krishna. But of course, Krishna knew everything, and therefore he kind of kicked his leg, and this way he killed the demon. And this happened during this period when Krishna, during this festival. So this is where we hear the pastime of Krishna killing this cart demon. Another pastime, we've got 3 minutes, Shruti Prabhu's here. I'm almost done, Prabhu, so we'll be in time. This is an interesting pastime also. Sometimes it's mentioned that Krishna shows mysterious magical incidents with his devotees. Why? Like, for example, like there's an incident where Mother Yashoda is... when we hear this pastime, it's mentioned Vishnu Chakra Thakur says, pastimes of Krishna's childhood display the power and majesty of the Lord. So by sucking Putana's life, it shows Krishna's immeasurable power with his lips, right? By killing the cart demon at the age of 3 months, Krishna showed his power of his feet. And the next pastime we hear is killing of whirlwind Trinavat, and it showed the power of Krishna's hands, basically. So these pastimes actually show Krishna's power of and his different features. And then the next pastime is quite interesting. This is a pastime which Mother Yashoda actually experiences quite often. And this is a pastime where one day it's mentioned Mother Yashoda was breastfeeding Krishna, and she thought that she could feel his teeth coming in. And when she had finished eating, she said, when Krishna had finished eating, she said, "Open your mouth and let me see if any teeth have come yet." And just as she suspected, Mother Yashoda saw Krishna's baby teeth, which looked like a tiny drops of milk in his little mouth. And then another day, Krishna was again breastfeeding Krishna. Mother Yashoda was breastfeeding Krishna. And when Krishna finished, Krishna yawned. And when Krishna yawned, Mother Yashoda could see the entire creation, the upper, lower planets, the earth, everything in the mouth. And so it's mentioned, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that Mother Yashoda's indifference to Lord Krishna's opulence is not material. Rather, it's a symptom of great transcendentalism caused by the influence of Krishna's sweetness. So it says that Krishna sometimes tests whether his devotees' love will wane in the face of awesomeness. It just shows that do devotees get bewildered by Krishna's Aishwarya Bhav or these mystical pastimes? But acharyas say that Mother Yashoda saw universe in Krishna's mouth, but she was not disturbed, and she just prayed to Narayan for the protection of the Lord. That's why these pastimes actually happen. I've got a few pastimes, but I guess I ran out of time. But actually, I will say one pastime. One pastime quickly is the Trinavat pastime. And, we think that Trinavat pastime happened because Trinavat wants to kill Krishna, but Krishna has his own intention. There was two reasons why Krishna let Trinavat pastime happen. The first reason is that Krishna was thinking that I want to fly in the sky, but Mother Yashoda can only just take me high, to some degree. So that's one reason why Krishna let Trinavat take him to the sky. And another reason was that the demigods wanted to actually see Krishna close. So that's the reason why Krishna went to the sky, so the demigods can see Krishna very closely and actually experience his pastime. So that's the reason why Krishna allowed Trinavat pastime to happen.